Hello and welcome to Growing Up B2B. I'm Ed D'Elia, president of D'Elia Associates, the place where B2B brands go to grow. For over 60 years, and now across two generations, we've been helping B2B companies achieve next-level growth through brand distinction, quality lead generation, and sales enablement. Growing Up B2B was created for family business leaders who are passionate about growth, legacy, and making a lasting impact. Whether it's a multi-generational legacy or multiple family members working together, there's something truly magical about blending business with family. And we want to celebrate that right here on Growing Up B2B. So be sure to stick around to the end of the show and find out how you can be our next guest. Okay, let's get into it. Hello and welcome to another episode of Growing Up B2B. I'm your host, Ed D'Elia. I'm the second generation president of D'Elia Associates. We are the growth advisory and activation firm focused exclusively on family-owned B2B companies. And today, I'm joined by Greg and Dejali Pila, husband and wife leadership team behind Tribe Tokes. Since founding the company in 2017, Tribe Tokes has grown into a nationally recognized wellness brand, serving more than 100,000 customers and partnering with over 200 retail locations across the country. Along the way, they've built the business without outside investment, navigating one of the most highly regulated and rapidly changing industries in America. But beyond the products themselves, their story is about entrepreneurship, building a values-driven brand, working alongside your spouse, and creating systems that allow the business to scale while staying true to its original mission. Greg, Dejali, welcome to Growing Up B2B.
Thank you so much for having us. This is awesome.
Great to have you today. So, for listeners who may not be familiar with Tribe Tokes, Dejali, could you tell us in your own words what the company is all about and what you do there?
Yeah, absolutely. So we have a North Star in our company that's never sell anything you wouldn't give your own mother. And when we were starting out, we recognized how much kind of garbage, low quality product, especially when you're looking at the underground cannabis market, was floating around. And we wanted to start a brand that people could trust, kind of the merger of wellness and cannabis or plant-based products. And we started out with vaping because that was a vertical that was particularly dirty at the time. And okay. So we launched clean vapes because if you have a vape that's done well, it's actually way easier on your respiratory system than flower. And then we expanded the product catalog from there with that same like healthier versions of everything ethos.
Okay. Interesting. So, Dejali, you came previous life from investment banking, equity research, and startup leadership. And Greg, you've built businesses and sales organizations throughout your career. So, what did how did the two of you come to say, "Hey, let's do this together. Let's build this business. This is a business worth betting on." How did that? Talk a little bit about how that came to be.
I guess I'll take this one. So, I think it was originally Dejali's kind of idea to get into cannabis and, you know, explore what working in that space could be like at the time in 2016-ish. And so she was kind of like ready to figure it out. And then we ended up going to California to meet up with an old friend of mine because he had a bunch of farms. And so we were going back and forth to California and kind of getting our feet wet into the industry. And it was a wild experience in California where we were helping my friend and some businesses trying to get more legitimized and more organized. Mm-hmm. That person actually ended up stealing a bunch of money from me and a bunch of investors. And it was really crazy. So it was one of those wild California cannabis experiences. After that, looking back years later, it was actually a really good experience for us because while we had that, you know, major hiccup, we made a bunch of initial contacts and kind of built a network that helped us like get our clean vapes off the ground. And, you know, then we kind of decided, hey, let's work together on this and let's go nationwide and kind of be back in New York and New Jersey and start kind of a CBD company. And Dejali is the CEO and kind of started the company. And I was working maybe part-time at first. And then soon after, we started working together full-time while we were dating at the time, even, you know, and then got married and kept the good times rolling.
Okay, yeah. Wow.
My co-founder, Kim, and she joined about a year in. Mm-hmm. And then Greg Moore officially joined as the business started to scale.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So needless to say, the first venture that you've worked on together, or had you had any business dealings before?
When we met, we were both doing entrepreneurial things. And I think okay. We come from entrepreneurial families and didn't kind of take over our family businesses. I think growing up, witnessing that affects you in some way. We had both started out of college doing corporate and then had left to do various projects. And then when we were first dating, we were like co-working and helping each other with each other's businesses. And then like it just kind of evolved naturally. It really wasn't this like, you know, when you're always together, that ends up happening, I think.
Although it sounds like there was a healthy exchange as a foundation and healthy lines of communication from the start, and that just translated into healthy business, right?
It really did. We always like to kind of hang out all day long together. And, you know, some people that doesn't work, but we like it.
Good. Good. Well, hopefully it stays that way. So so looking back, every business has a handful of what we'll call defining decisions. So as you look back on the journey so far for Tribe Tokes, Greg, maybe I'll put this one over to you. What's one decision looking back that really fundamentally changed or shifted or enabled the trajectory of Tribe Tokes?
You know, the first thing that comes to mind is we, you know, have no investors. We kind of built this slow growth grind for many years, and it's sustainable. And, you know, we haven't been the biggest company, but we've kind of outlasted a lot of our competitors. And then the defining thing that comes to mind for just right now is we've kind of flipped to becoming a lot more aggressive recently. Our business is really prepped well to scale. And so we started kind of hiring, you know, really top talent and higher paid kind of people. Mm-hmm. And so went from kind of that a little bit more cautious, like conservative financial model to, you know, we poached a director of sales from one of our biggest competitors who's great. You know, we're looking, you know, we're hiring a bunch of other people in different departments that are really like come from huge success stories at other companies. And so it's always a balance of like, you know, using AI and hiring very kind of low cost people in the Philippines that are amazing, you know, has been great, but that more aggressive, like build out, I think is something in the last several months that has made a huge shift for us, you know, changing that structure.
So it's sounding very much like the company has ended that first chapter of startup mode and is now very much in going maybe more towards a scale mode. Would you say that that's a fair assessment of where you're sitting from a trajectory right now?
You got to ask the big boss. She's the CEO.
I'll ask the big boss, Dejali. Would you say that's where you're at?
Yeah, absolutely. We're trying to transition from when you're starting out and the founders are wearing all mm-hmm. the hats to then actually hiring for each position.
Nice. So you're in an industry where it would seem that regulatory issues are changing quite rapidly, almost monthly sometimes, it would seem. So how do you continue to build and scale that organization when the rules of the game seem to be themselves evolving, let's say?
Maybe like Meta as an example? Or?
Well, you just always need to have like backup plans to the backup plans.
Okay.
What we've learned is not to operate from a place of fear because unfortunately, we really don't know what's going to happen because our government is so volatile right now, and things have happened that you never thought were going to happen in a million years, in not just our space, that's like every single sector. Like, I don't think people thought a year ago that like the Department of Education would be closed, or like, you know, everything going on with it. So our space is just another, you know, there's lots of that going on right now. But you, I think having like acting aggressively and assuming that everything is going to work out, but also having backup plans and being able to pivot. And honestly, that's where I'm pretty happy we never took on investor money. We just have a lot of flexibility and we don't have that pressure. I think that if I had taken on millions in startup funding and had no idea, like, if Congress was going to completely like try to overhaul our business in a year, I would have a harder time sleeping at night.
Yeah. And like, just add, maybe as an example for the audience, you know, in our space, like, advertising is very restricted and very difficult. And so, you know, you have to figure out, like, there's all these workarounds and, you know, different things you have to do to do Meta advertising and Google AdWords. And you can't just do it how everyone else does it. You have to do like all these fancy like things that are cautious, but still, you know, get your ads up. So it's very challenging, but the people that figure it out, you know, are able to kind of outcompete some of their competitors. So every industry has challenges, but, you know, one of ours is advertising, but we're starting to really crack the code, and it's a challenge, but also a big opportunity for us.
That's awesome. And if there's one trait that seems to resonate for me as I listen to both of you, it's agility. And I think by, you know, not going after investor support or funding, that's enabled you to maintain that both autonomy and agility, which it sounds like is much needed in this particular environment. And certainly you're not the only guest we've had in the show who wasn't subject to some level of government oversight or regulation. So that's always, it would seem it's a dynamic in your industry, but it's certainly a dynamic in other industries as well these days. So very much understood. I want to touch on something that, Dejali, I think you started to key in on earlier in our conversation. The core principles, it seems that yours have always been around transparency and high product quality. Talk a little bit about the, as you started to set up this brand, why was that kind of a non-negotiable in your mind from the beginning?
Yeah. Well, it's a trend we're seeing not just in cannabis, but really across all consumer products right now, is that people want to know what's in their food. And there's a lot of education going on around like processed foods. And it really, that what you put in your body really is affecting us. And it's showing up in, you know, gut health and like all of these kind of diseases that are becoming way more prominent, and people are shocked, and that it's really from like 30 or 40 years of eating a certain way or whatever. And we saw people in the cannabis space when we were first looking at everything and trying to figure out where we fit in or where, you know, which verticals we went under, just some really bad practices. And so that was just, it was kind of like a no-brainer.
Nice. Got it. And yes, it seems that, and that trend seems to be, you know, continuing where, you know, more and more people are really pulling back the hood and saying, you know, not only what am I eating, but what is this packaged in, you know, and is that an impact on health? So, it's been a real, interesting shift from, you know, gosh, when we were kids and we'd eat anything from anywhere, it would seem, and maybe not making the healthiest options or choices.
Yeah. There's a higher level of awareness now. Even when I order, you know, if you order Chinese food and you get a soup and it's in, you know, it's like boiling soup in a piece of plastic.
Yes.
Like, oh boy, I'm about to drink plastic right now. But it's just our minds are now becoming more aware.
The friend of mine sort of declared that I'm not going to eat any foods or processed foods or anything in plastic, and I'm thinking, boy, that is a challenge, to pull off. That's because when you think about packaged goods and the predominance of plastics in foods, it's yeah, how do you avoid that? That's tricky. You got to really work at that one. So let's get around to the 2019 vape crisis. That really changed the public conversation around the industry seemingly almost overnight. Talk about that moment, looking back. How did that affect your business, and what did it reinforce about the path you were on already?
That was a short-term crater and long-term benefit because what happened, there were a lot of mostly underground vape companies that were putting vitamin E into vape pens because it almost like looks like that golden oil, and they were using it as a filler. And what's almost comical is that when companies put like all natural or like you can claim that vitamin E is technically all natural. It's like, so take when you see that claim, kind of take it with a grain of salt. But people ended up in the hospital, and I think there were even a few deaths. And right, what happened at first is that people just stopped vaping because they were freaking out and didn't know if that's what happens with all vape pens or just trying to navigate what was going on. And then what happened is that then education started happening, and then people were just, all of a sudden emailing in, like, what's in this? What's do you add anything? And then purposefully choosing brands that are not adding anything besides the actual extract.
Got it, got it.
And we got some like press about that, like, oh, brands that are doing it the right way.
Yeah, so it ended up definitely helping us, at some point, because, we make vapes and gummies really well and pain creams and tinctures, but vapes are particularly difficult to make. So that's why a lot of companies, that's one reason why companies kind of cut corners and use all these fillers and propylene glycol and glycerin and coconut oil. Coconut oil is good for you to like maybe eat, but it's bad for you to smoke. So yeah, that trend was interesting because we were already doing that for a few years of making the clean vapes, but it kind of kept us rocking.
So, do you find that, Greg, in addition to advocating for your brand, are you still finding yourself having to do that that missionary work relative to educating and educating and informing either buyers or future buyers about the products themselves and the delivery systems available today? Does that
Yeah,
come
I
with the
think,
territory, would you say?
yeah, it's just kind of like the back kind of just has bled into our marketing. And I asked one of my wholesale customers recently, like, how do you sell our product? He has his own store. And he was like, he told me, he's like, I tell people, hey, if you don't want to get popcorn lung, if you don't want to get the hacking cough, buy Tribe Dogs, right? He's like, if you only want two ingredients, right? No other surprises. So he had some good ways of selling it, and so yeah, those values have kind of bled into our marketing and even like the other people selling our products.
That's great. That's great. So, always love to ask this question, especially whenever I'm talking with a husband-wife team, and we've had several on our show to date. So, how do you, the two of you, kind of divide responsibilities, and how do you make sure that the business doesn't sort of take over the relationship, if you will? So, Dejali, I'll let you take that one first.
Fire your husband once a week. No.
Ours is pretty simple, where I'm kind of doing most of the direct-to-consumer marketing, and Greg is covering wholesale. And then our other business partner is running like customer service, customer experience. And so we all are pretty busy, like in our own lanes. And then obviously there's things that we're kind of overlapping on, like, strategic decisions and managing the team and hiring and firing and all that type of stuff. But as far as like day to day, we kind of have our different things that we're in charge of. And then more on like a personal level, people ask me, how do you work with your husband? And I'm like, how do you not? Because I have two little kids. And I mean, even before we had kids, it was still convenient for things like traveling. And, you know, if we wanted to work remotely together and when we used to have that freedom. and then for me, I think for women that want to be entrepreneurs, like I honestly didn't think it through that, oh, I'm not going to have maternity leave. And that was extremely challenging. Like I was really sick when I was pregnant, and then we had a newborn, and we were like tag teaming everything, you know, schedules, or like Greg helping me cover for things like if I couldn't show up in a certain way for work. So that was pretty crucial, I think.
Yeah. And I think, you know, the only other thing I'd add was some couples need some like separation maybe from their work and then going into their evening or whatever. We like talking about business. Like we like this stuff. So, and we like hanging out with each other. So, you know, for the people that like those things, it really works for us and we have a good time with it.
You also troubleshoot and problem solve way faster. If we need to figure something out, you don't have to like set up a meeting. It's like, you know, which we're, that's how it used to be when people worked in offices together every day.
Yeah.
And now that's not always the case. And so what can happen is, A, you can get really lonely, like working remotely by yourself all the time, or B, decision or like communication can slow down because you're like messaging or calling or setting up Zooms and you're not really getting that like quick. And so that's been really helpful as well, just for like speed of.
And it's fun to work with someone who has, where she's from in Boston, they say wicked smart. So.
So tonight at the dinner table, if a business question comes up, totally okay, right? It happens, and it's not a, hey, we got to shut it off. You know, once we hit the dinner table, it's you guys keep it fluid.
We work on shutting it off together. You know, we're like, hey, it's 10:30. We're working. We really should stop. we like talking about business and scaling and going crazy and having fun with it.
So certainly, as I mentioned, there's been other husband-wife teams on this program, and there's listeners out there that maybe do represent that. And there's some out there that might be thinking about that. Do we do this together as a couple? Do we extend our relationship into business? So based on the journey the two of you had so far, what are some things you might guide someone who's thinking about a couple that might be saying, hey, should we endeavor to go into business together? Should we not? What are some rules of the road, if you will, looking back at your own journeys? Dejali, I'll start with you.
It's a really tough question to answer because everyone is so different and everyone's relationship is so different. Greg and I met at a WeWork, like co-working. It's okay. Like this is just how we naturally like function. and it never felt like a big transition. And I feel like entrepreneurship was something that we bonded over originally, like when we first met.
Okay.
And so I think people know in their hearts and in their guts whether it's a bad idea to work with their spouse.
Okay.
I feel like people inherent, like just listen to whatever you're feeling inside.
Okay. That sounds good. Greg, how would you follow that up?
Fun. This is exciting. Then.
Yeah. I mean, I would say, obviously, it's very personal, but my opinion, to be more direct, is like for those people that do want to do it, I think it's great. Like we know other husband and wife couples in some other businesses that are great and they feel the same benefits that we feel of like tag teaming and being on the same schedule and, you know, just going at this journey together. And then, you know, it's typically a bad idea to hire other family members. It works for some people, but you know, it gets messy, you know, quickly with other family members. But I recommend the husband-wife team, I think, is a strong team.
I mean, because if the foundational relationship is there, you know, it stands to reason that foundationally good business relationship can stand up as well. You know,
if you're, it's important to have a very secure relationship, because working together, there are situations where you have to like give each other feedback and stuff.
Yeah.
And it can be like a fight, you know, like you're, but I think with your spouse, you're automatically like, you know, the person loves you and has your best interests in mind. So that's maybe helpful.
I'd have to go ahead.
You're snoring. We got a French bulldog. So if you have any background noise.
We tried to put him across the room so that there wouldn't be snoring in the background, and he has found his way back over. So
is he the mediator in case the two of you don't see eye to eye on a business issue?
Or the closer, the sales closer.
That's great. So a lot of times on the show, the subject comes up of the rising generation, that next generation. Obviously, you have young children there. It's a little bit premature to be talking about whether they might succeed you one day at Tribe Tokes. You never know, but a little early in the journey for that. But as you look to that rising generation, what do you believe a leadership trait is important for them to possess as we enter this interesting world, a world that's right now seems to be dominated by AI and technology and access to information? As you look at that rising generation, that could even be the next generation of Tribe Tokes talent or personnel or leadership. What do you think is important, Dejali, that they have to possess to navigate in the now?
Mm-hmm. I think the most important skill right now is meta learning, meaning like learning how to learn, if that makes sense. The only thing we know is that almost nothing is going to be the same. Like everything's changing really rapidly.
Yeah.
And just being excited about figuring things out as they're changing. And so that's something that I've been thinking about, like for our kids, but also as we're hiring, we're like, is this person kind of stuck in their ways? Like, oh, I just have always done it this way and I don't want to change. Or are they like, oh, there's this new tool that came out, I'm going to learn how to use it, incorporate it into what I'm doing. And so we're like interviewing around those traits.
Great. Greg, your thoughts?
Well, our friend Katie Shea, who's like a successful female venture capitalist that we are very close with, she said recently to us that her son, Blake, who's 4, 3, she said, if you want to play video games, you have to make your own. And so we thought that was very cool. And the kid did, like his sister was a little older, made one with, you know, Claude or whatever. And my point is that I think is really cool in that encouraging people to create things, you know, and so whether they join a family business or start their own business or start their own project, I think helping your kids create stuff and think about like that as the driving force is what I've been thinking about lately.
That's a pretty cool task to put forth to a 3 or 4 year old. Yeah. I'm still processing that. Right. But I think it's great. That's great. And certainly it would seem we're entering a period where it would seem that having experience and expertise is great, but being able to ask the best questions, it seems to be becoming more important. Than having and owning and holding the expertise. It's asking the questions that will activate it, certainly in the age of AI and prompting. Speaking of, Greg, by all indications, you seem to be becoming very immersed in the utilization of AI in the business, whether to streamline operations, identify legal workflows, or other internal processes. Talk about that for a moment. Where is AI showing up and having the greatest impact in the business so far?
Yeah, I'll try to make it quick. I could go on a couple hours in this one, but I'll preface by saying, like, I'm under the assumption that a lot of people are like going as aggressive as they can to AI. So I don't want to sound like I know more than anyone else. But we spent all day in Claude and AI, literally all day and night. And we're trying to, I spent most of today researching what are the latest AI, cutting edge tools and skills and upgrading my systems and my thinking. That was like my project for the day. And how are people using agents and how are people using AI employees and how, and so that was what I was doing all day long. And specifically, what I'm did over the last 2 months is I started with an outcome and I said, hey, Claude, what I want to do is I want to build an agent team that does my sales outreach. I'm not involved basically. And so I want you to identify leads. I want you to make sure those leads are not in our CRM and that we're not calling people the same, that we already know or our customers. I want you to email those people. I want you to send voicemails to those people. And when they respond, I want you to respond to them and try to book meetings on my sales guy's calendar. And, also check your system and make sure it's upgrading regularly and it's sending me reports every morning. So it's a full sales system I built that's just started to work in the last few weeks. And, I think 200 emails went out yesterday and, it's going to scale up even more from there and get more and more function. So, yeah, I'm all in on it and trying to get better every day and having like a lot of fun, in that side of the business.
That's awesome. That's
Daisy
awesome.
as well.
And Dejali, are you equally getting versed and immersed in AI?
Yeah, I've been using it mostly for digital marketing, SEO, copywriting, coming up with ad concepts, building out new product lines, definitely a lot of product development, ideation, keyword research. Greg's been using it for image generation and content generation. So, yeah, lots going on. I'm
That's
hooking
cool.
it up to my QuickBooks, hooking it up to different analytics, using the MCPs, trying to kind of have it review very large data sets rapidly and come up with like insights or recommendations. Especially if data is living in different places, something that would have taken me a long time to analyze and sort through. And now it's just like grabbing it from here, grabbing it from there, putting things together. And that's really helpful.
That's awesome. Wow. So, as AI continues to evolve, and it appears that it will continue to evolve, where do you think that business leaders still need to rely on human judgment? Because certainly, you can prompt and you can set up functionality and you can activate AI. However, where does the space and place of human judgment still reside in your mind?
Well, I could take a
You want
first
to take
step.
that one, Greg? Okay.
I heard today someone say like for I think Gary Vaynerchuk said, he has 3,000 employees for his company. He's not firing anyone. He's just making everyone like 10x, 100x better. So, I don't see any drop in human, judgment and involvement. You could argue that many different ways, but it's just making us so fast. Building things so much better and quicker. And so, we're kind of moving in this era of like the more stuff we can have the AI do, and we're more of the reviewer and not the implementer, that's kind of the current status. Next week, there might be a different thing that's more advanced than that. But the human's not gone. The human's just like hugely leveraged. So that's how I look at that question.
Nice. So ultimately, it's AI not to replace, but to enhance, accelerate, magnify, maybe, and ultimately make better. Yeah, that makes sense. Looking back, and you referenced before, and we talked about this, the business, you built a business without outside capital. Would you say now today that that was the smart move, the right move, and not having that constraint ultimately today represents an advantage for the company sitting? Usually, I'll let you take that one.
Yeah, I mean, especially when we were starting out, we didn't really have access to paid advertising. And as a CPG company, you've like sources and uses, either your uses of capital are like ads and inventory. Mm-hmm. And so one thing we did probably 3 years ago now is we brought manufacturing in-house for our biggest product categories. And it took like a year, and we had to like hire, like build out that department and get a bigger space. And, but that brings inventory costs down a lot, cutting out mm-hmm. contract manufacturers. And then it also improves your cash conversion cycles because, you know, you're not, sometimes it can take months to get inventory from a supplier, and we're just like moving pretty rapidly. Mm-hmm. And then on the paid ad side, so we were kind of forced to start out with SEO and email marketing because of the advertising restrictions, a lot of which have now like loosened up, like, you know, we're 7 years into it.
Yeah.
And so it's like if I were to take in money before, it's like there wasn't really anywhere to even put it. It's like, what are you raising money for, right? Mm. And now that we are able to spend on ads and they're doing well, like we could raise for that, but we actually, because of our size now, like we have access to like lines of credit or mm-hmm. financing that is actually cheaper than equity. Because once you get to a certain size, I think equity is the most expensive technically, yeah. if you're assuming success. And like interest rates have come down a bit in our space. They've normalized. They were really crazy at first as well. So yeah, I mean, if you know, like, oh, if I put $1 million at this and I get 2 or 3 million out, it can make sense to fundraise mm-hmm. for sure. But it's like, yeah. don't just raise for the sake of raising, like know, you know, what you're going to
do. Have a plan. Yeah, I get it. Nice. Okay. So a topic that comes up a lot, you know, often talked about on this program, and especially around the family governed businesses, is one of trust. So let's talk about trust for a minute in terms of how do you build trust in your company? How do you build trust in an industry where the buying audiences, whether they be B2B or B2C channels, may have questions about quality or consistency or transparency. So how are you going about deliberately building trust for both those that you serve and those that are coming to under the Tribe Tokes banner as an employee?
I think one way to build trust is like, if you do mess something up, you're just honest about it and fix it and say, this is how it's not going to happen again. I feel like that's what we encourage internally with our team, mm-hmm. but also with our customers, you know, like if somehow someone got shipped the wrong item and then we show like one thing like our co-founder is really proud of is like, she'll just call customers right up, be like, mm-hmm. happening, we're going to fix it, you know? And it's always like a human there, especially in this world where a lot of things are there's companies you just don't really even know like who's behind them or mm-hmm. the black box. And just trying to be the antithesis of that.
I just met an entrepreneur and he's built a sizable website and following. And basically what he does is he publishes phone numbers of like call centers like Google and Facebook and places that seems
to be numbers
impossible to penetrate.
Facebook. It's awful. Very it's cool. Crazy though how there's, you know, multi-billion-dollar companies that don't have a phone number for customers, yeah. for paying customers to call. It's like,
yeah, yeah, that's shocking, isn't it?
Pretty wild.
But that's awesome that you know, something, you know, hey, life happens, mistakes happen, and yours is a company that that owns up to it if it does. Although Greg told me earlier that you've never made a misstep or a mistake as a company, so I believed him because he said it with a lot of conviction. So
everyone makes a mistake.
For sure. So part of it is just being open and honest and saying, hey, when we got it right, we got it right. When we got it wrong, we got it wrong. And here's what we're going to do next. And I think that sounds great. So looking back on the journey, the last 8 years or so, how do you see your roles having shifted or evolved or changed over that journey? And maybe to look at it another way, what have both of you had to stop doing in order to let the company continue on its evolution? Greg, you want to start with that one?
Yeah, I mean, the first thing it makes me think of is, you know, we have a lot of friends that are business owners, right? And scaling their companies and whatever. And, you know, one of the biggest parts of that is, you know, they call it owner dependency. And so the more we can stop doing, the better the company hypothetically will be. Mm-hmm. You know, there's always going to be work for us, right? But if I'm heavily involved in the sales and there's not someone else who's better than me ideally doing that, the business isn't going to grow too much. And so we've had, you know, I think that is a good thing that we're working on now. Mm-hmm. But you know, for example, that's kind of where I'll that's what makes me think of. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, there's kind of a couple buckets of things you let go of in my mind. It's the things that I absolutely hate doing, and I was just doing it because I had to. And then the things that you're actually not the best at, right? Yeah. Kind of recognize. And then there's a few things that we're all doing that, like, I think might be a little outside of your core scope or maybe above your pay grade, but we're just really good at it. And and so I don't know, you could argue that's a good thing, like you should do what your superpower is, or that you kind of get stuck with things because you're good at it, and that just because you're good at something doesn't mean that you should be doing it necessarily. So I think we're like halfway there. I think probably there have been certain things that all the owners were doing that we've moved on from and hired for, and that was mm-hmm. the right thing to do. There's still probably a few things that we're all doing that we're doing because we're good at them, but we, mm-hmm. in order to scale, we are not going to be able to continue doing that.
But you have that self-realization to know, you know, what are those aspects of the business that, you know, eventually you're going to have to fire yourself at, say, you know, it's right. It doesn't serve the business for me to keep doing this, even though I'm good at it, or especially in those areas where you're good at it, but maybe don't like doing it. Those are probably the easier ones, I would think.
Yeah. There's been a couple of things I've hired for and then I've taken it back. Yeah. There are things that are so important that it's just the best person should be doing it. And then there's other things that I've hired for and I'm like, oh my God, thank God I did that. They're so much better at this than I am.
Yeah. And the nice thing about a business that's still in that early stage is the outcomes of those decisions are usually fairly quick to spot. You know, it's not going to take years and years. It's going to take maybe weeks or months at most to say, this was great, you know, or this is not going well.
Right.
So that's good too. So as we look out to the future, say a 5-year horizon, where do you hope the Tribe Tokes is at that point? And what would it take to make you feel that you've built something that's now truly lasting and is going forward in a good way?
I mean, I think that we're at the point that like the brand and the products are like lasting and have made an impact. We just don't know how regulations are going to change. So once there's clarity around that and we can reorganize around whatever that is, mm-hmm. federal compliance around hemp, etc. As far as where it will be 5 years from now, I every time I say I think something's going to be a certain way years from now, I look back and laugh because life is crazy and you just
yes
know. So I honestly cannot answer that question.
Okay. So Greg, as you look to the future, what do you see?
Yeah, I think, again, we have no clue, but what we would like to do is a couple of things. You know, I don't know what it's going to be, but this is what we want to do. We want to have a business that's big enough and thriving enough that, one, you know, it's cranking. And even with all the crazy regulation shifts, the business has the protections of different product lines and different things that it could still thrive in kind of any environment. Mm-hmm. So we are building towards that. And you know, some of our business friends, right, follow like Benjamin Hardy, the author, like, and so he's kind of all about, hey, have an impossible goal that's roughly like 10x of what you're doing now and do it in 3 years or less. So that's a cool concept that we think about. So we, you know, hopefully in 3 years, not 5 years, we're 10x bigger, and that will hopefully adjust how we make decisions today is the idea of that concept.
Well, yeah. By the way, 5 years ago, if you had asked me this question, I was absolutely positive that the end goal was to get state licenses and transition from hemp into like the legal state cannabis market. Mm-hmm. And what we've realized since then is that the government is a really bad business partner.
Mm.
They're just, you know, the requirements, the taxes, it's they make it really tough on the industry.
Yeah.
So yeah, my view on that has changed significantly, but who knows?
And it sounds like, you know, the vision will continue to evolve, you know, and you'll maintain that level of agility to meet whatever challenge comes up and, to stand shoulder to shoulder together and see it face on overcome, you know. So a great start, that's for sure, a great start. So exciting things ahead, I think, no matter what they might be. Last question, if any of our listeners wanted to connect with either of you to learn more about your journey, your story, or even learn more about Tribe Tokes, what's the best way for them to do that?
We're at tribetokes.com.
Okay.
Yep.
We'll find you there.
You know, our name's Greg at Tribe Tokes, and we're happy to connect with people and collaborate and help, you know, other businesses any way we can.
Awesome. And certainly all your contact info will be in the show notes as well. So to wrap up, what really stands out in this particular story is that enduring businesses are built on much more than a great product. It's all about trust, discipline, high adaptability in this case, and a willingness to continually evolve as leaders while staying true to those core values that inspired you to be in this business in the first place. So regardless of what industry you as our listeners happen to represent, as a family-owned B2B business, these types of lessons, I think, are truly and remarkably universal. So Greg, Deja Lee, thank you so much for spending the time with us today to share your story and perspective. Again, we've been speaking with Greg and Deja Lee Pila of Tribe Tokes, and I'm your host, Ed D'Elia, and this has been another episode of Growing Up B2B. Thank you so much for joining us today, and we'll see you next time. Greg, Deja Lee, it's been a pleasure. Thank you for being with us.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Hey, thanks so much for tuning into Growing Up B2B. To explore more episodes and insights, visit podcast.deleonet.com. And if you've enjoyed this episode, please give us a rating or review on your podcast platform of choice. Having worked with hundreds of family-led businesses across my career, and being a second-generation leader myself, I'm on a mission to help every family business I meet achieve next-level growth for their organization. So feel free also to connect with me on LinkedIn and let's support each other. You can also find out more about my company at deleonet.com. Again, I'm your host, Ed D'Elia, and thanks so much for joining us today. Take care.